Yes, Your Honor. Thank you so much. May it please the court, my name is Jameson Cantwell. I'm a deputy county attorney with the Douglas County Attorney's Office. I'll be representing the appellant in the state of Nebraska on this matter. I would like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal, if I may, please. This case is about the attempted murder of two Douglas County Sheriff's officers by Tyler Pitzel, the appellee, just 6 months prior to his 18th birthday. The district court abused its discretion in transferring this case to juvenile court, first, by not fully reviewing the evidence as offered by the state, and second, by not giving careful consideration to the factors as outlined in the statute. As this court is aware from the record, the state offered a series of police reports, approximately 141 pages, into evidence in lieu of live testimony from the Douglas County Sheriff's officers that were involved in the case. This is investigative reports, witness statements, describing the events that occurred that day.
Have the facts already been described by Mr. Pitzel's mother?
To a certain extent, absolutely, from a defense perspective. And I think that was probably clear from the record, too, where Ms. Pitzel's allegiance lie. However, Ms. Pitzel had no awareness of other witness statements, nor what the deputies saw, heard, and did, nor what the investigation showed after the events that occurred.
What authority do you have that the court had to review all of the police reports before ruling?
Well, Your Honor, I don't believe the judge necessarily has to be told to review the evidence. However, there is a statute that hints at it, 29-18-16-3A, that requires the court to consider evidence from both parties when determining whether a case should be transferred from either adult court to juvenile court or vice versa. So if he wasn't told explicitly, it was definitely told impliedly by statute that you have to review the evidence, and especially if the case has seriousness. And I think the record is clear that he did not review the evidence in its entirety.
How many of the factors that apply under 43-276 sub 1 would that evidence run to?
Well, at least a few. I have three that I plan on discussing today, but there are factors that the court made mention of but didn't go into depth involving. For example, the court didn't consider the age of Mr. Pitzel. The court didn't consider whether Mr. Pitzel might need supervision extending beyond the age of minority. The court overlooked also motivation. The court mentioned that motivation couldn't be discussed in full because Mr. Pitzel claims he doesn't remember it. Those are things that, giving a full read-through of all the reports, there are signs of motivation. There are signs showing him a little bit of backstory on Mr. Pitzel that was going on prior to this one night that Mr. Pitzel described. They could fully educate the court in making such a serious decision.
Is the court's order clear enough for us to do a complete review?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Because it is an abuse of discretion standard, but because of the record that was made and the court's order only mentioning a couple of the factors, it's clear.
The court's order doesn't mention any of the factors, does it?
Well, not the written order. The court's oral finding, I should say.
The written order just says, I considered the criteria and I rule that it should be transferred.
Correct. I believe saying I made an oral finding on the record allows this court to read oral findings on the record, and I think that's done somewhat occasionally. It allows you to look at his actual findings, and you can see that there are some glaring mistakes and mishaps.
Are the oral findings sufficient?
Absolutely not. Well, I should say the oral findings are sufficient to make a ruling.
Correct.
He just did not make the adequate oral findings or considerations.
So his basis was sufficient. He gave us enough information to make a determination on our appeal in this matter based on his oral statements. Is that correct?
I'm sorry. I don't think I understand.
His oral statements in court. Did he address the criteria set forth in the statute?
Not fully, no, Your Honor. I believe that's what the abuse of discretion is, if I'm answering your question. Some factors the court did not make mention of, I want to mention first and foremost, the age of Tyler Pitzel. When determining whether or not to transfer him from juvenile court to adult court, the court does not even mention his age when he committed this offense. He was 17 and 6 months old when he opened fire on police officers. The importance of this, when you balance the other factors, including the factor of whether Mr. Pitzel would need supervision extending beyond the age of minority, is that this is such a small amount of time. This is months, 18 months in maximum, from the time the crime occurred. In order to supervise Mr. Pitzel, possibly adjudicate Mr. Pitzel in juvenile court, and supervise him, because once he turns 19, no more supervision. He's done.
Isn't that age a
deciding whether or not it's best for him to go to juvenile court, given the violence, given the possible motivations, and given the aggression involved in this case. So, I mean, I agree that 19 should be the cutoff, but the court should still look at the fact that he was 17 as opposed to 15, 14, 13, 12 years old and committing such a crime of violence.
But the court knew he was a senior high school, right?
Yes, that was mentioned on the record. But the point is that you're supposed to at least look at these factors, including his age, that he's so close to that threshold of 18 years old before you can start in juvenile court, and 19 is a cap, especially when looking at all the other factors. And the court didn't do that. The court didn't make mention of his age nor the amount of time available to supervise him. And it's a minimal amount of time. This is obviously a very serious event. This court has read the record. Somebody could have been killed. It's such a crime of violence that it deserves more attention than the limited amount of time available in juvenile court. As of today, there's only 10 months available left to supervise Mr. Witzel in juvenile court, to fully rehabilitate him, adjudicate him, and supervise him before he's back on his own, and there's no record that's ever occurring, at least publicly.
You simply have a failure of proof here. You did not, for example, call any experts to rebut the defendant's experts.
No, Your Honor, and I don't believe experts necessarily are always relevant. The defense expert that was called, for one, we didn't know about that until the day of. Those kind of things happen, nor did we receive a report knowing that the defense was going to call this expert regarding the neurological disorder. However, I think the expert was
interested. If I asked the judge for more time to get an expert.
In theory, we could have. However, we also thought that the judge would fully vet the reason the report was offered. We didn't think there was any issue given the amount of violence and the same story in the reports that we're not reviewing. Additionally, the expert that testified primarily focused his attention on what was going on in Tyler's head, what he didn't know his motivation that night, and that it
couldn't be understood because of this possible neurological issue. And it actually strengthened the state's argument. There was something very bad going on with Mr. Witzel that night. I agree. It can't be figured out in 10 months. That's ridiculous. He needs more supervision, and that's what the adult court can authorize. Either supervision while he's out on bond, and there's record in this case that bond money was lowered so that he can start some of his treatment and his mental evaluations. You can do that while out on bond. Or 5 years possibly of probation, or deterrence after release from incarceration, just as opposed to supervision or parole. And given the extreme level of violence in this case, society demands more supervision on Mr. Witzel. Mr. Witzel assaulted both his parents with a baseball bat, stomped on his father's head. He then retrieved his shotgun and opened fire on those 10 sheriff's officers, striking one of them.
That information was already on the record.
Absolutely was. The problem that the record is clear in that the court didn't actually balance any of these factors. The court mentions this is a crime of violence. It's serious. You have to look at extreme level of violence and balance it with the limited amount of time available to address this issue. There's no time available. I agree. There is no. And that's where you have to look at all of them. And that's where the record is deficient. And the judge did not look at all of these factors to determine maybe what's best for this kid, this is Mr. Witzel, in determining should he go with only months left of supervision, or should the adult court review him for a longer period of time to determine what was going on in his head that night and determine if society needs to be protected longer than 10 months from today's proceedings.
Did Mr. Witzel have a record before this event?
He did not. He did not have that. I see that I'm in my rebuttal time. I would like to reserve that time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Davis, good morning to you.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. It's kind of a significant moment today. This is the first time, I think, in Supreme Court history that there's been more ladies and men than gentlemen.
Wrong.
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 2016. Well, we're moving in the right direction. My name is James Martin Davis. I'm an attorney for Tyler Pixel, and my job today is to give you the top seven reasons why you defer Judge Fulton's decision to transfer my client's case to the separate juvenile court. Reason number one, there was a mandatory requirement to transfer this case to a separate juvenile court. It's contained in the statute. Number two, the state failed to meet their burden of proof because they failed to establish a sound basis for the district court to retain jurisdiction. It's in the case law. It's in the statute.
Does the district court's order provide us an adequate basis for a meaningful review on appeal?
Well, I think so, coupled with what he incorporated by reference in statements he made in open court. You look to the evidence that you heard during the time of trial, and then the references he made to it in open court.
Does he speak to every factor in the statute?
I don't think he had to. I mean, you know, some were the fact that why
Did
would
he
you
speak
talk
to any directly?
Well, he knew the age of the. Yeah, he talked about motivation and whether or not I think that the client. He in effect talked about the mental disorder my client had, the fact that he was suffering from a neurocognitive disorder caused by a traumatic brain injury.
And that he thought he might need an evaluation.
Excuse me?
And he thought that he might need evaluation and treatment.
Yeah, he thought that was one of our arguments we made, is that juvenile court has the facilities to do it.
And he said it was very serious.
Yes.
What else did he say?
Well, you know, I don't have the transcript with me, but I think what he addressed is he talked about motivation, and that's one of the factors.
And he said he couldn't decide motivation based on the cognitive disability.
And that's a point in our favor, because the burden of proof is on the state to prove motivation.
So he talked about cognitive disability. He talked about the
maybe
violence. A need for treatment.
Yes. He talked about violence.
It was a violent offense.
Yeah, but that we admitted that. We conceded that. But that violence is one of many of the...
What about the 8 or 9 other factors he was to consider?
Well, some of those factors, is he a gang member? That wasn't relevant. But what the factors are that we addressed, and I addressed in my argument, were the motivation for the commission of the offense, and then... whether the type of treatment such juvenile would be likely to be amenable to, that's the very first one. The motivation of the events, the previous history of the juvenile, I think that was addressed. And what I argue is Section 8H, consideration of juvenile's ability to appreciate the nature and seriousness of his or her conduct. That was our medical evidence. That's why I addressed it with our expert. I addressed it with the mother. I also addressed it with the doctor. Reason number 4 is the reason the violence of the crime was outweighed by other factors under the law, which this court, I think, considered and conscientiously considered. Number 5, if there was any error of law, it was harmless there because the evidence in the state's police report, that Exhibit 3, was redundant and cumulative to the testimony at the hearing and the evidence of affidavits. Transcript, if you look in the transcript, page 5 and 6, there's an affidavit from Deputy York. And it contains, it's a summary of everything that's in exhibit number 3 that they say the judge didn't look at it. But it's redundant, it's really irrelevant because we conceded the violence in this case. There's no question about that. That wasn't an issue. But that's all that was addressed in their exhibit that they say the judge didn't consider. You know, what he did consider, the transcript and the complaint and the things that are right there in the file, and I invite you to look at that transcript, pages 5 and 6 or whatever, and look at that and compare it to the exhibit they say wasn't received.
Your understanding is looking both at the oral pronouncement and the written order, A through and including O were all touched on under the statute.
Well, yeah, but again, that brings us to, you know, my argument in this case is that the state is asking for a de novo appeal when the standard of view is an abuse of discretion. In their arguments, and what you're suggesting, judges, maybe the judge didn't have a basis for it, but he ruled this isn't a de novo review. What the prosecutor's asking to do is, well, wait a minute, there was a sound basis. Overrule it because he ruled wrongly. That's not why we're here. You can't overturn his decision because you think differently. There's got to be an abuse of discretion. And that was not an abuse of discretion in this case to not review those factors. I mean, an abuse of discretion exists when the rulings of a trial court are clearly untenable and unfairly deprive a litigant of substantial rights, and they deny just results. You know, you can't say that was the case here. You know, what they're asking is that, well, wait a minute, because you, the court didn't consider this redundant evidence, this cumulative evidence, this evidence that wasn't disputed in the first place, that that was abuse of discretion.
So is it your position that the 141 pages of petition forms would not have offered any different analysis that would have assisted the court in doing the balancing test for the statute?
Absolutely. It just all went to the violence. And the, my mother testified to everything. Now, in the state's brief, I counted them, and I may be wrong on it, but in their factual basis, there are 45 references, citations, to my client's mother's testimony. She was a victim in this case. She was beaten. She's in count five. She is listed as the victim of the assault. But if you look at the transcript, or you look at their factual basis, they established their factual basis through my mother's, or through my client's mother's testimony. They referenced it 45 times. So you know, what are we talking about here? You know, certainly there was violence. And we admitted that. Mom admitted it. But her testimony that they didn't reference to was related to all the odd behavior. This kid, you know, the night before had four serious blows to the head. I don't know if we have it in the transcript or not, but you know, we talked about the damage to his helmet. He was that night. The coach pulled him aside and wondered if he was okay.
Counsel, how do any of those facts, in weighing them or balancing them, how do those weigh in favor of transferring the case to the juvenile court? Can't all those issues be addressed appropriately in either juvenile court or in criminal court?
Well, they can be addressed in both courts, but they're mandatory duty.
You seem to be suggesting that those factors weigh in favor of transfer, and I'm just trying to understand the connection.
Well, I mean, one of the things that the judge considers is the juvenile's ability to appreciate the nature and seriousness of his conduct. We showed through our medical testimony that he couldn't appreciate that. And now, you know, a court, a district court can't. When somebody's on a bond, that they can lower his bond and make a couple of conditions, but they can't order, like a juvenile court kid, that you get psychiatric evaluation and that you provide services sometimes paid for by the county. You know, they've got a whole litany of different programs that can address problems in juvenile court that a judge cannot order in district court. He can set the conditions of bond. But, you know, the fact is we had not only a coach saying this guy maybe had a concussion, but the pediatrician said, hey, this kid's got problems. Then we had a neuropsychologist say, this kid suffers from some kind of mental disorder, and we've got a forensic psychiatrist, not only a forensic psychiatrist, but an addiction specialist testify, this guy has a neurocognitive disorder caused by a traumatic brain injury. Now, I call your attention to the DSM-5 diagnosis for this psychological disorder that he had, and usually there's 6 or 8 or 10 criteria, and if you get 3 or 4 or 5, they'll say we can make this diagnosis. There were 8, I think, criteria for this this disorder that he had. He met every single one: the loss of taste, the loss of smell, slurred speech, the amnesia, all of these things. So there's no question, you know, I think that we demonstrated that this kid had this disorder, and that was the direct and proximate root cause of the violence.
And is that a disorder that's going to require treatment?
Yes.
So how does that weigh in favor of transferring to juvenile, or when the amount of time that we have to treat him is so small?
Well, I mean, that doesn't mean that the parents can't continue to do it. What it does mean is that he's not going to get probation, and he's not going to be able to get that kind of treatment, you know, when he's in the penitentiary. That's what we're talking about. This, the whole statute's for the benefit of the benefit of the child. It's not just to punish people, because there are not services that this kid could get that's going to be remedial to him in the state penitentiary.
Mr. Davis, before you sit down, I have one last question for you, and that is the Section 29.18.16 that specifies the procedure states that the court shall consider all of the evidence you've made. I think the record is clear that the documents were not read by the trial judge. You've made an argument that it wasn't necessary to do so. If we do not agree with your argument on that point, that the trial judge should have considered all of the evidence, what would you suggest is the proper disposition of this appeal?
Well, I don't think that's abuse of discretion. I mean, if he says he should consider all of it, what does that mean? 95%, 99%? It's not, the question is, it's not, this is not a de novo review. The question is, how was that abuse of discretion?
I'm asking the question, and I'm not allowing you to reject my premise. But my premise is that a contrary interpretation of the statute to your argument, do we send it back for the trial judge to look at all of the evidence again, or do we do something different?
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, I think you have to send it back for further review. You can't overrule it and say he was wrong, because then that's a de novo review, and that's a no.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal? 1 minute and 5 seconds, Mr. Cantwell.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Cantwell, if you'd like to take a crack at that question, I appreciate your
response. Mr. Connor, on the most recent question, I don't think there's enough time to reverse this and send it back and tell the judge or the case and make another decision.
Is that controlling on us?
I'm sorry?
Is that controlling on us?
Absolutely. We have full breadth of reports in the events and what occurred. There's
absolutely... It's not a de novo. Is that correct?
No, I agree. This is an abuse of discretion, but because of the time constraints, there's absolutely not enough time to just reverse and say, start all over again. Because if it does get transferred back to the last time,
when we have available a mandate for review on the record?
I'm sorry?
Review on the basis of the existing record?
Yes. I think you can review on the basis of the existing record. And there's absolutely a sound basis for retention.
Do you think you'd get a different result?
To be honest, no. I think if this were reversed and sent back to the same judge, he's human, he would review it and say my position stands. That's why I think it's up to this court to do what is right, to review the documents in its entirety, reverse and remain with instructions that this remains in its old court. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That concludes arguments for this morning. So the court is adjourned.